Friday edition, the last of the regular season in college basketball. I'm Matt Norlander, your host of the Eye on College Basketball podcast for CBSSports.com. Man, do I love this sport. I mean, I tell you, I can't get enough of March. I get older and this tournament keeps staying the same. It keeps being awesome this whole month. And I'm bringing on a first-time guest. Have long wanted to get this guy on. Doubted his existence. He had a Wizard of Oz-type quality to him for so long until I actually met him. Where did we meet? Was it last year? We got Randy McClure.
Yeah.
Randy McClure, who runs RushTheCourt.net, is finally on the podcast. Was it last tournament? I'm trying to think if we met 2 years ago. Did you go to the Final Four in Houston? Were you there?
I did. I was there, but with so many people there, I don't know that we ran into each other. Maybe we didn't know it. I hardly saw anyone because Houston is so spread out. But I'm pretty sure we definitely hung out in Portland for the first time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, no, yeah. We definitely hung out into the late hours in Portland. I still think about that bar restaurant we went to that had the pizza at like 2 in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, that was some great stuff. He is on Twitter at RushTheCourt. Although, like our Eye on College Basketball account, it's not just you that runs it, right? You got a kind of a
correct. It's two of us. One guy, Naveen, is in Miami, and then I'm out west, so we pretty much work the 3-hour time difference to our advantage on the Twitter account. Works pretty well for us.
All right, good deal. And you've built up a good following there. Now, before we get into the action of this week and looking to the weekend and all that stuff, I did want you to give the people the quick background on Rush the Court, because, I mean, you were one of the first ones. I mean, you were one of the first blogs. I remember when I started College Hoops Journal, Rush the Court was already existing. It was just you and storming the floor. And like the Dagger was around at that time, but that was like a Yahoo thing. In terms of independent blogs,
yeah.
I mean, there were probably other tinier ones. Like,
right.
What was the one way back when in like 05, 06? Yoko Hoops? I'm forgetting the name of it. You know what I'm talking
exactly
about?
That's exactly
what it was. Yoko Hoops.
Yep.
Whatever happened.
It was almost like an old message board, kind of, as I recall. I don't remember exactly what was on there, but I remember it had a very like 90s look to it.
Yes. So, to anyone listening that was running a blog back in early 07, was like, I was so on the scene. My apologies to you, but Randy got it going. So give us the brief oral history, the one man oral history on what Rush the Court is and was and what it's become.
Yeah. Brief oral history. Just, it's coming up on 6 years here in April. Started with just me. And basically, I was looking around. I think at that time, Deadspin was pretty big. It was a couple years old at that point. And that was back when they, you know, Will Leach, he did some really good stuff before they sort of jumped the shark, in my opinion. The Big Lead was kind of coming on the scene. So a lot of national, like, blogs were really kind of getting popular. I was reading them a lot, and I was like, man, you know, I would love to see something like these guys that produce, like, you know, analytical stuff, but also some kind of interesting, funny stuff for college basketball, just because I love the sport so much. I was never a writer, never intended to be a writer, never wanted to be a writer. So I'm a little different in that respect, but I was like, you know, I don't see a lot of this out there. Like you said, there, Yoko was in existence. There was another blog that I used to frequent that just was a daily bunch of links. And then I think Busting Brackets or something might've been around at that point. In terms of like more like visual, like daily updates and analysis, sort of like what I was saying with those national blogs, I didn't see it out there. So I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. And if I write one post and someone, you know, makes fun of me, I'll probably quit the next day. but luckily nobody saw it. So it gave me an incentive to go the next day and the next day and the next day. And sure enough, I mean, I think you're right. Storming the Floor started on the scene soon after that. I think the Dagger was soon after that, and sure enough, you know, now we've got just a whole bunch of these things. But, you know, everybody brings their value and their talent, but what I've always tried to do is keep it as an independent voice, the common fan, somebody who really loves the game, you know, sort of eats it up year-round, not just during the season, certainly not just during March Madness, and people have responded to that, and we've gotten some really good writers over the years who have stuck with us, and it's kind of one of these things where we all do it as our part-time thing, but I think as a whole, we've learned a lot and gotten to be pretty good at it.
Yeah, and the cadre, if you will, of college basketball blocks has grown and grown over the years, and that's been
Yeah.
good to see. Now, do you do much writing these days? Or I remember talking to you last year, and you say, you know, you had a nice posse of writers, and it's primarily editing. I mean, do you try and still sneak in a piece here and there, you know, once a month, or are you just so bogged down at this point with trying to keep the site up and going that you're just, you know, kind of watching over the assembly line?
You know as well as I do, Norlanda, the administrative stuff, keeping up with all that is often the time suck, man.
Yep.
I mean, just like we were trying to get this podcast going, it's 10 minutes for me to figure out how to use the Skype on the phone and things like that. So, you know, the truth of the matter is during the off season, I got more time to write. I write a little bit more during that, during April through, you know, October. But then I really step back and let a talented group of writers do their thing. We have these six microsites. I'm not sure what we're going to do with the Big East just yet for next
year.
Yeah. Those guys all do a good job, and I just do a lot of editing and coaching and helping them think of good ideas to write, and all of them are capable. So, you know, I do miss a little bit of like having that in-season voice, but I'm usually so busy with it doesn't really bother me that much because I'd rather have a few hours of sleep.
Yeah, no, I get you, man. And if you'll indulge me for about 60 seconds here, you know, I basically started College Hoops Journal back in the day for the same reasons. I specifically remember being inspired by Leach. And at the time, Jason McIntyre was just the big lead. He was anonymous. No one knew who he was. In fact, that was a fun little time when people were trying to figure out who the hell this guy was, because he would get some like decent media scoops. And I remember thinking, you know, I'd love to start this, but I know that I cannot do a national one. And I know that everyone wants to write about the NFL, because I love the NFL too. But I was like, you know what? I love college basketball just as much. And I've always said the NFL to college basketball writer comparison is like guys that play guitar versus guys that play drums. There are so many people that can play guitar, but when you find a drummer, that's when you've got some a real value and a chance to go somewhere. So I knew there weren't a lot of College Hoops writers out there. I started College Hoops Journal. And I tell you, when Will Leach linked to my massive opening bubble piece on Deadspin, I mean, that was like, I almost wanted to take all, it was like such a small thing. It was like two graphs. I've told him this on a past podcast too. It was like two graphs, but I wanted to take all my buddies out to dinner. Like it was the biggest thing ever. And those were interesting days. I actually can't believe we're this far removed from like, you know, 07, 08, but we really, I mean, this is a totally, totally different era now.
Totally. And just by the fact that there were quite a few at that time, if you recall, team blogs,
yes.
At least for some of the bigger schools like Kentucky or North Carolina or whatever, but nobody had, or not many people had really grasped that national college basketball thing. There might have been a few even conference ones at that time.
Yeah, I mean, Gassaway had Big Ten Wonk, but that was almost like quasi underground at that point too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and I agree with Leach was a legend. So you know, all he produced so many online writers just from that short period he was in charge of Deadspin.
He really did. And, you know, a not so deft humble brag. I know Leach listens to this podcast right now. So there you go, buddy. He won't own to that, but it really is the truth. Let's get on to the hoops. And by the way, if you're wondering what Randy McClure looks like, basically he is a younger man's Bryan Cranston in Deadspin without the Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad without the goatee with the glasses, man, right? I mean, that's accurate. Have you gotten that before?
I don't think I look quite that old. I was thinking more of Michael Stipe, say, Losing My Religion era.
Really? But you got, but you're not that gangly. I mean,
that's true.
Yeah,
that's
you
true.
Got some stature to you. All right, let's get to the hoops. I'll go to Kentucky first because they lose a bad game on the road at Georgia. You know, I know it's on the road, but it is Kentucky. Now,
yeah.
Calipari afterward, you know, he's very savvy. I never underestimate just how savvy of a coach this is, and just in terms of PR and image. And immediately he says, you know, quote, I've done a crap job. I can't believe how bad I've been with this team, how bad I've coached this team. Props to him for basically getting ahead of the columnists for writing these, because you can easily write this is on Calipari. And you know what? Maybe it is, but it's a lot harder to write it when he is clearly stepping in front of the train for this team and taking it. Do you have a kind of an opinion on what Cal has done with this team this year? Should he get a lot of criticism? Is it on this freshman class? Where do you land now with Kentucky now that it's in a spot truly where it's got to minimally reach the SEC title game to get in at large?
Yeah. So I agree with your point completely about Calipari being a master salesman, master marketer of the program. You know, he took a lot of heat. Was it 2010 at the NBA draft when he said this is the greatest night in Kentucky basketball history, a program that had won 7 national titles, had a lot of good nights over its 100-year history. And, of course, you know, that team went to the Elite Eight and really got upset by West Virginia. So people are like, well, come on now. This is nonsense. It doesn't make any sense. So the point being, though, he was setting it up for future recruiting classes. And that's what I feel like he's doing here again. He knows that he's gotten a group that, for whatever reason, they just haven't completely bought in to the selflessness, to the team, to being teammates with each other, buying into his defense. And, of course, he got a bad break with Nerlens Noel. So what I look at here is he's taking that blame. He's deflecting from the players because he doesn't want that message to get out. That any, first of all, him, but also the fans have started to really pile on the players a little bit. And he needs that to not happen. He needs to make sure that everybody's happy in recruiting land, and the next group and the next group and the next group will continue to come to play for him, because he will get another good group, and he knows it.
I brought this up, I think, on one previous podcast. I want to bring it up again now, and I know we're going to talk about it come the summer and the preseason. But even though it's a new group coming in, shouldn't we have some apprehension about crowning Kentucky as a preseason number one or even top three team next year? I know it's a different group. I know people think this next group is going to be better, has more talent. But to me, this, at the very least, is the reminder to us to say, let's not crown Kentucky's freshman class that's coming in as the greatest recruiting class of all time, even if Wiggins signs, because there are so many variables just in terms of injuries, performance, how they accept playing at Kentucky. I mean, you and I have no idea what it's like to be an 18-year-old to step onto that campus and basically be a god.
No, it's regression to the mean, though. This is what normally happens when you bring in a team of mostly freshmen and they have no upperclassmen leadership. And you know, Nerlens Noel was a great player. I don't know that he was going to be able to lead this team to great things because there's just too many guys on the team that weren't bought in. Last year's team was special. And I mean that in not only in the sense of their talent, but in the way that they were able to buy in and do the things that Calipari wanted them to do. And, you know, the fact that they lost that game against Vanderbilt in the SEC tournament final and really refocused everything and blew through the NCAA tournament was, in my mind, really validation of that. So, you know, this is normal. Even with great recruiting classes, they typically don't go and win the championship at 38-2. It's not the norm. So next year is going to be interesting, right? I mean, it's another number one class. He might have more guys coming in, as you said, but should we elevate them to number one just based on that? Who's coming back? And is there even a potential for guys getting in each other's way? Is it too much? That's always a possibility as well.
Yeah, and then there's the simple math problem where you've got all these guys coming in, you got to ship the other guys out. That's kind of one of those good problems, but it'll be interesting. I just wanted to address it quickly. That'll be something we talk about on podcast going forward. I know Goodman Parrish have plenty of opinions on it, but did want to address it now. But one more quick one. Kentucky is in the NCAA tournament this year. Yes or no? Do you think they can win an SEC tournament, or do you think they're NIT bound after what they did against Georgia?
I think they're going to end up in the NIT. I think right now, you know, arguably if they beat Florida at home in senior day, you know, not that they really have any seniors, but it'll be a hyped up crowd.
Right.
You know, and again, arguably if they get to the SEC finals, as you said earlier, but I don't think they will. I think that this team, we've seen what they are. They're 20-9. They don't do perform well on the road. And, you know, although they did come back to beat Missouri in that game here a couple weekends ago, I always looked at that team and I thought Missouri was the better team. Missouri just has its own issues on the road. So, you know, I just don't think they're going to be able to beat Florida or make that run in Nashville this year.
Yes, and to the Kentucky fans listening that were yelling at their iPod or stereo, Twani Beckham and Julius Mays are seniors. Don't worry.
Right.
I know. It's just a common trope. I want to hit on a few teams here. One, North Carolina. They're 22-8. They finish up with Duke on Saturday. They get that at home. That second Duke Carolina game is always a little funky because the first one obviously gets so much pub, and then this one's right before the SEC tournament. Sometimes it means a regular season title's on the line. That's not the case for North Carolina. Now Duke can still tie with Miami, but regardless, 22-8. A lot of people are liking the four guard lineup. They're thinking North Carolina is a sneaky team. It's funny, actually, because now North Carolina is seen as what Kentucky was 5-6 weeks ago, the blue blood that's been down, but now don't underrate them because they can be really good. I actually don't buy into UNC all that much. I know they're on a nice little 6-game winning streak, but there's just something about them that I can't allow myself to buy into. So basically, do you think this team is capable of winning? And I know that we don't know the opponents, so just big picture, but yeah. Can you envision this team making a run to the second weekend? Because I'll say, regardless of opponent, I don't think it's in the cards.
I don't see many scenarios where they run to the second weekend, no. I mean, I think that they have obviously played a lot better in the last few weeks. Their competition hasn't been that great, but frankly, they were losing to some of these types of teams before that. So what I look at, I say, you know, Roy has found a gimmicky offense here, and he's really maximized with the gimmicky offense what this team is capable of. And they won 6 in a row, and they're going to be 12-5 in the ACC right now going into the Duke game. But I don't think they beat Duke on – is it Saturday night?
It is.
I don't think they're going to beat Duke in Chapel Hill, even though they're playing better. With Ryan Kelly back, I don't think they're going to do it. And I don't think they're going to win the ACC tournament. So then what's their seed? What are we looking at? Norlander, like a 6, 7, 8, something like that?
I would guess – now it will – I think they will have a lot depending on how that ACC shakes out in terms of Virginia, NC State. I'm going to say a 7, though.
Okay, so 7. So you're talking about beating a 10 in the first round, and you're talking about beating a 2 in the next round, and I'm just not seeing that. And it would have to be really an ideal matchup for them with their small lineup in that second round to make it to the Sweet 16.
Agreed, and this will lead me to my next point. In my opinion, the 1s and 2s and 3s, for you know, there are no guaranteed number 1 seeds, and I find this to be amazing, maybe even an undersold point at this point, that we are entering the final regular season, a week into the regular season. There's no team that is locked into a number 1. This has never happened in the extended era. Like, never, ever. This is totally unprecedented. But that said, with the 1s and 2s and 3s, they're very interchangeable, but I do think there is a separation there. Maybe it's in that 4 line, but you talk about UNC as a 7 going up against a 2. I just find the teams that are of that quality to be a 2 seed, I think there is a big difference there. I just don't think we're going to see 7s or 10s beat 2s. I expect a lot of the 1s and 2s and 3s to move on. We'll get some upsets, don't get me wrong, and we're probably going to get one double-digit seed get to the second weekend, but are you with me just in terms of the top 12 to 15 being specifically separated? Because that has not been the case in recent years. You could have easily said the top 5 is separated, but then kind of 6 through 20 is the same and 21 through 40 is the same. I think it's different this year.
Well, let me say this. The thing about for people, you know, maybe they make the Sweet 16, and it's a Norfolk State that they're playing in the second round instead of a Missouri, right? And then they
Yeah,
there's always that possibility. Doesn't make them what I would say, quote unquote, a Sweet 16 level team. Nevertheless, if you get there, you get there. So that's the beauty of the tournament. I actually probably would disagree a little bit, though. I think we're looking at somewhere in the range of 3 to 4 of the Sweet 16 coming from the double digit seeds this year. And of course that does include 10s, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's not that much of an upset. Sometimes those teams are even a little bit favored depending on the situation. But I think that it is going to be tough for the number ones at that point. So as you said, the 1s, 2s, and 3s after the Sweet 16 level, I think it could, all hell could break loose. But getting there, I think by and large, most of them will.
Okay. Within a vacuum, I want to talk about Virginia. They're the most polarizing bubble team of this year. We always have one, and they're the team this year. They are 20-10 after getting Michael Snared on Thursday night. And a quick thing on Snare, I just love the fact that college basketball has a killer like this, and I hate the fact that he's on a terrible team and they're not going to be playing in the tournament. It is such a tease, dude. I mean, Florida State has been overlooked in terms of how just bad they've been. They should be so much better. It's really a joke. So a bummer that Michael Snare, maybe they win an NIT title on a buzzer beater, but he's made 6 of them. He's been awesome. As for Virginia, 20-10, have lost 2 in a row. They took a bad one on the road to Boston College on Sunday.
Ooh.
But they do have, you know what? They beat Duke. The Maryland wins okay. The North Carolina win's okay. The Tennessee win is actually looking better, and they win at Wisconsin. Our own Jerry Palm at CBSSports.com has been anti-Virginia to a trolling degree. I would have them out right now, but I think they're going to sneak in. I think they're going to be in Dayton. Where do you have them right now, and where do you see them on Selection Sunday?
I got to tell you, I'm not the best bracketologist, man.
I know.
We have a guy, Daniel Evans, who's bracket expert. He handles all that for us. But the way I'm looking at Virginia, though, is I think they're going to sneak in. I really do. I mean, snare gun aside, and the, whatever happens with Boston College, the problem is they cannot go and beat Maryland this weekend and then enter the ACC tournament and lose to another bad team. Because, you know, you and I did the mock selection. Actually, I think that's the first place we hung out.
It's a great, that's a great point. That is where we met.
And we talked about some of the, you know, there's all these rules and these guidelines and so forth, but everybody in the room has human nature. And everyone in there knows that every game counts the same, but it really doesn't. And everybody knows that, you know, the last 10 games aren't supposed to be a metric, but it's still used when it's close, even though if they don't talk about it.
Right.
So, you know, all those things have to come into play. And you look at their overall resume and you're like, God, how do you lose to Old Dominion? How do you lose to George Mason and Delaware like early on and then beat these other teams that you mentioned? Very tough call. I think they will sneak in on virtue of the Duke win and the North Carolina win, and just by the fact that they're in the ACC, and I think that still to this day has a little bit more sway than it probably should.
Okay, and now we get into the discussion of what means more to you, what should mean more to the committee, multiple bad losses or multiple good wins, because Villanova is another team. You know, Doug Gottlieb will not put Villanova into the tournament. I think he's nuts because, you know, UConn's a decent win, and then, of course, they've got Louisville and Syracuse and Marquette and Georgetown. Those all came at home, but they're such good wins to me. Like,
yeah.
And Villanova's season's done. They don't have a game this weekend. They play in the Big East. If they lose their first Big East tournament game, you know, we don't have to get into whether Villanova should be in or not, but if you win that many good games, I'm just simply going to give you more slack for losing bad ones because you've proven you can beat tournament quality teams, and therefore, you know, that gets you in the door. If you're a team that hasn't really beaten many tournament quality teams like a Memphis, then it's not, right. And you haven't had any bad losses or stumbled as much. I just put more stock into what Villanova has done than Memphis, and I say that as a guy who loves when teams run the table or only take one loss in their small league tournament. I can't put Villanova's wins aside. It's too much. Agree or no?
I'm agreement with you on this one. I feel like the objective of the tournament is to have the best teams playing, and if you've proven capable of beating, you know, not just one or two, but three really good teams in your schedule, I'm going to be able to forgive some of those bad losses. I think a really strong win is actually worth a little bit more than some of those bad losses. So I'm going to be sliding on the side of Villanova in terms of this analysis.
All right. We'll go off the board a little bit here and head back to your side of the country. West Coast guy, Stanford, Cal, Thursday night. I was in bed. Well, hey, and I usually stay up, but I you know, it was like, I don't know, 12:40 or something. And I was like, you know what? I'm passing out. We had a busy night, and I go to bed. I wake up and I see there was a fracas, you know, and it was a fracas. I don't think it didn't, you know, elevate to a brouhaha or any sort of rumble, but the talk of it, you know, and three assistants get tossed, including Doug Gottlieb's brother, and two players for coming off the bench. It was Powell and Crabb did not get ejected. It was guys that came off the bench. But it did spark the discussion of why the hell there is a rule that prevents. Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know what? I think this is a legitimate thing. Like, it's easy to have something happen and you have a talking point. It's almost like, let's just have it to have it. But this one actually, this one surprised me. I did not know it existed. I don't think anyone really knew it existed. I get keeping players on the bench in a fight. But to me, right, assistants should be able to come off the bench and try and cool things down. Because you're not going to have a 32-year-old assistant swinging haymakers. Like, that's just not going to happen. And the day it does, that assistant's getting fired or suspended for the rest of the year minimally, right? I mean, we should be trying to change this in the offseason.
Yeah, Steve Wojciechowski excluded. He might actually get in the fracas with Paul McGlure if he ends up at
a great point.
But I take the point. I was watching the game, and it was just a really weird ending, and it took 20 minutes for them to sort out who was going to be ejected, and the game was out of hand at that point. But then Johnny Dawkins is standing there with no assistance. He's basically got a walk-on as an assistant there. It was pretty perplexing. I understand the need for the seatbelt rule, and it's one of these things where they legislate something. You can't think of all possible situations when you're in a policy group and you're legislating something like that. And I'm sure it just never occurred to them that the seatbelt rule would be a situation where, you know, assistants would come off to protect players, and that by the letter of the law and the rule, they would end up getting ejected as well. So I'm hopeful that will be changed pretty quickly this summer.
By the way, your podcast interview technique, you're very radio friendly with your responses. It's kind of this 45 to 60 second cadence.
Oh.
And they say, hey, and that's fine, dude. But I'm so used to Parrish. Okay. I'm telling you.
He's used to hosting, right?
He hosts the radio show. And
yeah.
so then he can just gab on as he wants. And then when I have him on the podcast, there will be times when I will set up a question to him and I will kick back, and I've debated actually taking my headphones off, going and getting like a drink, maybe checking my mail and coming back and just chancing, but I haven't done it yet. But maybe one day. Now another reason why I wanted to have them on the podcast is you did this Ultimate College Basketball Broadcaster Draft with SI.com.
Yep.
Richard Deitch set it up. And it was you, it was Deitch, it was Matt Yoder from Awful Announcing, and then John Orand, who has been on the podcast. He's been on the podcast as well. And you guys basically picked your favorite announcers. And I'm looking at who you had. So you picked Barkley, you had Dokic. Good choice there. You went with Gottlieb. All right, well done. And Tirico and Gumbel, a lot of CBS love here. Seth Davis. I mean, you're all over the CBS, man. This is how you get on a podcast. You actually went with Dickie V.
Yeah.
Can you just set up how that came about and what that was like? I thought this was really cool. Just a random kind of thing with March here, and you kind of picked your favorites. Although I don't think Farnham was on this, right? And Farnham is a Monday podcast guest, so I'm gonna have to bring this up to him and put that all on you, man.
Yeah, he got an email. You know, I don't even know how Deitch found out about it or whatever, but he said, you know, he didn't want to join. I guess he had done one for the NFL at some point, or maybe it was Awful Announcing that had done it, but he liked the idea, wanted to do it, and he gave himself the first pick, of course. I understand that, a little home cooking on the first overall, and of course Gus Johnson was number one. I don't think that surprised any of us. My thinking was I had to get a good studio, and I really think I did, with Gumbel hosting, Barkley, Gottlieb, and then Davis acting as the straight man, because those two guys, Gottlieb and Barkley, are just going to be going on and on with the crazy stuff. And then I wanted to have, I really liked Tirico and Dokic. Listened to him again just last night, I think it was, and Holly Rowe as the as a knowledgeable sideline reporter. Then I got a little crazy with my other booth. I went Kanoa Lehi out in Hawaii. I don't know if you've ever heard any of his.
I don't. WCC. That's a total wild card there, man.
Yeah, but he's really good. He's really good. You should give him a listen. He's got a great little accent. You're going to be just thinking about pina coladas and your honeymoon. And then, of course, Dickie V was a sort of like an honorarium pick for me, because I remember when he was college basketball, and I thought, you know, he's not what he used to be, but I wanted to make sure he was represented on here. And then Scott Van Pelt, of course, loves his college basketball, and I had to put him as my wild card.
SVP, absolutely. I like that wild card pick. Now, was Vital a big reason why you got into hoops, you know, when you first got into it? Because for me, I can specifically recall watching Big Monday and the conference tournaments, like maybe it was like over a 2-year process. Those were the two things, even before the NCAA, like I got into it, don't get me wrong, but my earliest memories are like, I want to stay up and watch the 9 o'clock Big Monday. And once the tournaments were on during the day, I would actually faked being sick to watch the conference tournaments instead of the NCAA until I caught on and was like 14 and realized what an idiot I was. But what actually got you into college hoops?
Well, my family was into it, and my friends were into it. That pretty much is all you need to know as far as that's concerned. I mean, it's you're always into what people around you are into. And the thing with Vital, like, you know, I remember when he was a good announcer. And I know that's probably really blasphemy for a lot of people today. But every so often, you'll see something on Classic, say like an 88 Georgetown-Syracuse game. And if you sit down and you start listening, first of all, you're like, who is this guy? This doesn't sound like anybody I know, but it's Dickie V. And he's actually giving you good analysis, and he understands the game, and he's doing his super scintillating Dickie V stuff too, but he was solid. And at that time, late 80s, early 90s, he was synonymous with college basketball.
Yeah.
If we had held that draft like in 1992, he would have been number one. He was the Gus Johnson.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I mean, you know, not to go all old man, get out of my yard, but you know, a lot of the younger people just don't like him because of all the Dickie V stuff, and he's sort of become a caricature of himself. And I understand that, but I picked him, I think, 7th or 8th round. Just, again, sort of, he represents some of my youth. He represents the passion of college basketball. I've never disputed that. And all the stuff he does for Twitches vs. Cancer is also amazing. The V Foundation.
You're right. And I do want to get Vital on the podcast. I've talked to him about this. I actually am going to try and get him on in the off season because, one, Vital does a lot with cancer. And, yeah. I've met Vital and talked to him, you know, just when there's no cameras around. And he's still Dickie V, but he can also be Dick Vital, if you get what I'm saying. And he, I just feel like it would be a really good podcast when he didn't have to worry about games or whatever. Just, you know, maybe in the middle of May or middle of July or whatever, when I can just talk to him about, you know, the ride he's been on for the past 35, 40 years. Because the dude is a genuinely, like, really giving, nice, passionate human being. And, yeah, you know what? Sometimes he's got to put on the mask and do the Dick Vital kind of thing to prop up college hoops. And it's why, ultimately, like, he is good for college basketball. And, and as dark of a thought as this is, like, whenever Vital does leave the coil, like, we're going to – that's when everyone's going to realize, like, just how big of a monolith this guy is with the sport. I mean, he lords over it. No one has ever had the kind of impact from a broadcast standpoint basketball. And I'm talking both levels. Like, I know Barkley's like the superstar now, and he's kind of – he's his own thing. Like, he doesn't even approach to what Vital has done with college hoops.
Yeah, and I'll add to that. I think the V Foundation, something over $100 million in 20 years, a lot of it having to do with Dickie V pushing it forward. You know, I contribute every year, and I don't, not a lot, but I contribute what I can. And certainly I would also agree with you. I've never heard a story about back channel, front channel, any channel, about Dickie V being a bad guy. I've never heard that story. And I think the first time I do, I would have to question where it's coming from, because he always has time for people. I always see him at all events that you and I go to, taking time, talking to folks, signing autographs, even now into his 70s. He's just always been that kind of a guy.
Where are you going? What are your March plans here? Are you heading to any conference tournaments, or are you going to couch it before the NCAA start?
I'm going to couch it, but I got to give props to my boy, Andrew Morawa. He's both our Pac-12 and our Mountain West guy. So he's going to Vegas and doing both. And so think about that, Norlander. Vegas and two conference tournaments during the same week. How insane is that, right?
It's ridiculously insane. Goodman's squeezing in that WCC final on Monday. And that's got to be a lot of fun, but I'm also interested just to see how those teams play, because it is Vegas. And, you're a 20-year-old in Vegas, man.
That'll be locked up, man.
Exactly. That'll be quite interesting. So, all right, buddy. Sounds good. I guess we don't cross paths until Atlanta.
I'm going to stick around here and do San Jose, and then I'm going out east to D.C., so, you know, I'm going to have to deal with the shenanigans of Rob Dowster and Troy Bashir, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Atlanta, everybody will be down there. So it's going
to
be great.
Atlanta will be a great time, man. I look forward to crossing paths here. You have passed your inaugural podcast with Flying Colors. This was great stuff, dude. Love the talk spanning across, you know, games to broadcasting, just general stuff. So I appreciate that.
I got one more thing, Norlander. I got a PSA for all your listeners. You know, everyone, I'm sure, knows at this point you're having your wedding this summer, right?
Oh,
everybody
boy.
Knows about that?
It has been mentioned.
It has come up once or twice. So I'm going to just say to all your listeners, don't worry about his registry. Don't get him a gift, okay? Don't worry with all that stuff. Just go get the guy some Voodoo Donuts in Portland. Just have them shipped directly to his house there in Connecticut, because the guy made me stand in this line in Portland last year. What was it, about a half-hour line, Orlando, to get those donuts?
A half-hour line at 3:30 in the morning.
Okay. At 2:30 in the morning. Give the guy the donuts. He loves them. Just send them to him. He'll be happier than any gift you could possibly give him.
That is too kind of you. And a story that will be saved for another time is, we got those donuts. We left Luke Wynn, and Luke Wynn, like, saw a dude pull a gun on another dude. And it got crazy in a hurry. That was a very fun night. But you're too kind for that. Appreciate that. I will not reject Voodoo Donuts. That is right. Those are unbelievable. All right. Follow Randy at RushTheCourt, rushthecourt.net. Thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate it.